What did Sunday Night Football reveal to us about the Josh Dobbs-led Vikings? The Packers' youth shines against the Chargers. What a shock. The Chargers let a game go they should have won. And the Jaguars' offense, Calvin Ridley, Trevor Lawrence, we finally got a signature game. All that and more coming up on the Week 11 recap. Let's get into it. It's Monday, November 20th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, week 11, buddy. It's in the books. How's it going?
It's going pretty well. I thought it was a decent week, some decent scoring, some exciting finishes, a couple of buzz kills, but I think we know the teams in fantasy to avoid. There's like four or five teams that have just been driven into a ditch, and we'll try to steer clear of them when the bye weeks subside. Everybody plays in week 12, so I don't want to hear any complaining. You should have your best lineup next week. And we capped it off tonight with the Broncos and Vikings. You know, the teams that were shipwrecked a month ago, they've kind of salvaged their season. And I think we had a game that was symbolic of both teams.
I completely agree. So symbolic of both teams. Let's get right into it here. Broncos 21, Vikings 20. You just said it perfectly, Scott, where about a month ago, both of these teams, month plus, these two teams looked shipwrecked. They looked like they were going nowhere. The Broncos especially, I mean, the 70-pointer. It stinks that we have to keep bringing that up, but we do kind of have to keep bringing it up because it shows us where we were with the Denver Broncos. I have a lot of thoughts on the Vikings actually coming out of this game, but I do want to stick on the Broncos because they won the damn game, and I feel like they're a team that we don't talk enough about. But the Broncos are now 4-0 over the last four games. That's their longest winning streak since 2016. So shout out to the Broncos for that. You know, they're I can't quite put my finger on what the Broncos are. Is it bad to call them a little like tastefully boring? You know what I mean? Like, they're not offensively boring, but they're not overly exciting from an offensive perspective. But I think that Sean Payton and everybody associated with the Broncos, Scott, would probably take tastefully boring right now as opposed to wherever they were headed about a month and a half ago.
Tastefully boring might actually apply. The thing with the Broncos, I want to see more fantasy juice from this team. Right now, it's you can play Courtland Sutton, who's having an unbelievable red zone season.
Yeah, but that touchdown was sweet, man. That was, and he's
done it back two in a row, right?
Yeah,
he broke next gen stats last week with the most improbable reception in since they've been measuring that stuff. And then today he does a pole vault. He does this unbelievable catch to bail the game out. So he's got it's a thing where we look at touchdown rates and we say, oh, well, he's Courtland Sutton's not going to score a touchdown every week. This is going to regress. It's the only thing they have working for them when they get in close. The disappointment for me is I wanted to see Javonte Williams be a difference maker. And in this game, he gets 11 carries. He only catches a couple passes. We know when they go hurry up, they like to go to Samaje Perine because he's a decent pass protector. And he's also pretty handy when it comes time to leak out of the backfield. He was the guy who dominated that drive that was punctuated by the Sutton touchdown. I don't know that you can ever really play Perine. I mean, he'll have a game like this every once in a while. I don't think it's something week in, week out you can trust, but I wanted to trust Javonte Williams. We know the Broncos have had a very unusual split of touchdown passes to touchdown runs, and I would think that regressed a little bit. Maybe Javonte Williams would become somebody we could – I even thought maybe he could be like almost like a league winner, and my confidence in that is shaken after this game. I may get eliminated in my guillotine league. I know nobody cares about that, but the reason I mention it is because I could have played a lot of running backs who outscored Javonte Williams today, and I went with Williams, and after seeing this game, I feel a little bit silly for that.
Yeah, and I get your frustration with that too, because I think Javonte had been looking pretty good. And certainly from like a usage perspective, he'd been ticking up. And even from like a game script perspective, this isn't the script that you would think he'd get iced out of, right? Because as you mentioned, Samaje Perine catches seven passes for 60 yards. I still, it'll never get old to me that Samaje Perine has become this like passing down back. If you followed like Mixon and Samaje Perine and who they were together in that backfield in college, and then eventually they ended up sharing a backfield together in the pros, it just like you wouldn't have seen coming that Mixon is this like boring volume back early down grinder, and Samaje Perine is like this, I don't know, Kevin Falk. It's like, what is Samaje Perine is Kevin Falk? That is just not something you would have predicted if you studied these guys in college at all. Anyways, we know that he's going to come in, like you said, in the hurry up situations, the passing situations. And he ended up getting a bunch of those just by kind of happenstance with the way this game flowed a little bit. But it wasn't as if the Vikings got out to a screaming lead and the Broncos had to throw their way back into it. So for Javonte Williams to come out of here with 11 and 37, and then really just a little like two catches for 16 yards, that is pretty disappointing. I think the fact that Perine and Jaleel McLaughlin, and it kind of feels like that Sean Payton definitely really likes Jaleel McLaughlin, but also is like chasing some of those early season moments with him, because every time 38 is on the field, he's getting the ball. Like, you know, he's leaking out of the backfield. He's doing just like a little quick route out of the backfield, and they're going to try to get him the ball. Like, he's kind of a tell at this point. Like, it's screaming that he's getting the ball if he's back there. Those plays aren't really helping the offense very much, but they're hoping to hit those explosives. Like, he averages 2.8 yards per reception in this game. That is definitely a problem from a fantasy angle with Javonte Williams, keeping him, I think, from reaching his theoretical ceiling. But I mean, at the same time, this is kind of what we expected this season to be like for him.
Also, we have to admit that Sutton is the only right answer in this receiver room. Marvin Mims is getting on the field a lot now. He's still not getting targeted or really used that much. And who knows? I'll have to look at the all 22 and see if he's really getting open, or for whatever reason, him and Wilson just don't connect. And Jerry Jeudy, I don't want to kill a guy who caught five passes for 58 yards. That's an okay game. But there's always an almost play with Jerry Jeudy, and there was an almost touchdown tonight. That's the Jerry Jeudy experience in a nutshell. Yeah. So what are we left with? You can play Sutton pretty confidently as a lower-end wide receiver 2, higher-end wide receivers 3, something like that. If you're in a pinch, you could play Wilson because all the touchdowns are going to the passing game here. But I wouldn't want to play him at all proactively. And Javonte Williams is a maybe. You could play him. You don't have to play him. And I'm sure some people needed him tonight and probably lost because of the game that he had.
Yeah, Broncos get the Browns next. So it's not as if that's like a soft landing spot for any of these skill position players. But they get the Chargers they get the Chargers twice in weeks 14 to 17. So those will be big time games. Oh my God, the Chargers. We'll talk about them later. But yeah, Cortland Sutton's stat lines are pretty hilarious, where it's 4 catches, 66 yards, but the touchdown. 8 catches, 53 yards, but the touchdown. 2 catches for 29 yards, but the touchdown. You can just go back and back and back, and that's basically been the story of his season. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy for Cortland Sutton. I've had a journey with this wide receiver room and like where they're viewed in the public eye, but Sutton was definitely kind of left for dead a little bit to start this year. And
you mentioned guys, right? That's Joshua Dobbs, because Joshua Dobbs is not getting home in fantasy on his arm alone. But I believe it's 5 straight weeks he's had a rushing touchdown. And he's obviously a great athlete. He's very competitive. And the Broncos kept him in check. He only ran for 21 yards in this game, but he did run 8 times. He did get another rushing touchdown. So you look at him, like 221, a touchdown, a pick. That's not good enough. Oh, wait a minute. He ran in another touchdown, and he ran for 21 yards. He's already got, if you play in leagues that are 3-point passing touchdowns, he's already got like 2 passing touchdowns in his back pocket when the game starts.
I said a lot going into this game that the Vikings being on Sunday Night Football and like on a national island game was going to sort of reveal that there had been a lot more fits and starts and a lot more like volatility to the Josh Dobbs Vikings, I think, than the red zone highlights probably would have indicated, because like his fun plays are really fun. And they're you're like, wow, how is this guy like not a starting quarterback in the league? But he puts the ball in harm's way a lot. I mean, he comes out of this game with 1 fumble and 1 interception. I'm very curious how, like, you know, fantasy points data or Pro Football Focus is going to chart him in terms of turnover worthy plays, because there sure felt like a lot of throws in this game that he got away with. The Broncos are a pretty good defense, and I do think that needs to be acknowledged. You know, they've really rebounded of late. So it's not as if Josh Dobbs, and Denver's a hard place to play. They made a point of saying that. Chris Collinsworth made a point of saying that on the Sunday night broadcast. Like, this is going to Denver to take on the Broncos is no longer just like, that's a little gimme on your schedule. I mean, their run defense still isn't very good. Alexander Mattison had a decent day on the ground. Ty Chandler pops up for a couple of big plays. The one special teams fake punt obviously was the big one, but still their run defense is still a little suspect. But from a pass defense standpoint, you know, I mean, Jordan Addison gets blanketed in this game, barely does anything. The other ancillary receivers don't pop up too much. TJ Hockenson leads the team with 55 yards. This is his third straight game, basically all with Josh Dobbs, that he leads the team in receiving. I think that's a trend we can continue to see. But yeah, this game, I think, showed a lot more about who Josh Dobbs, and he's still a really good quarterback, great backup to have. All credit to him that he gets in there and doesn't play scared. Great story, too. He's obviously a great feel-good story. We should all be rooting for Josh Dobbs, but this is a little more representative of who he is now.
Very well said. Excellent backup, and could, in this case, he's going to start for this team for a couple of months, maybe in the playoffs, where the Vikings probably don't have any upside because you need somebody who's at least average quarterback, maybe better. And it's no sin to say this. Dobbs is a better fantasy player, a much better fantasy player than he is a reality player. That's okay. I mean, the Jets would love to have Joshua Dobbs right now, right? I mean, some teams that are down bad at quarterback, the Vikings are competitive, and they easily could have won this game. In fact, it felt like for the majority of the night they were going to win this game. I was impressed with Alexander Mattison. This was a key spot for him. Okay, he gets concussed last week. We go through the whole week. We're not sure if he's going to play. A lot of people, and I was one of them, were wondering maybe Ty Chandler's the better back. And if you didn't watch this game, you look at the box score, you'd be like, Chandler averaged 7.3 yards a catch. You have to throw the 31-yard fake punt out, right? It counts, and you'll take the points. But that's not a repeatable play. That's just like a fluke, gimmicky play. And God love the Vikings for having the nuts to go for that. That's great.
Seriously.
That's, if I can say that, the nerve to go for that, the cojones, whatever the word is. Please, producer Colin, pick the right one for me. But Madison, I don't want to throw a parade for the guy 4.5 yards a carry, but Alexander Mattison has not had a good season. And there's a time where I thought maybe Cam Akers was ready to take this job, and then he gets hurt. I thought Ty Chandler was coming on strong, and maybe this could be the night that he could take over this backfield. Mattison needed to make a stand. He came through with it. Chandler was the guy involved in the passing game where Mattison just had that one catch for negative yardage. Chandler had four catches. So Chandler's going to be involved. But I thought this could have been Alexander Madison's last stand, and it certainly wasn't that. Now, you look at the receiving game. They wanted the whole idea was that let's get Jefferson back to 100%. Love to steal a game when he doesn't play. I like Hockenson. I like Jordan Addison. You know, I like KJ Osborne for what he is. Brandon Powell, Josh Oliver. These guys are not bad players. You know, Hockenson's like a borderline Pro Bowler. Addison might be a star someday. But this is a band without a lead singer. You need your lead singer back. So we need Justin Jefferson in our lives.
Yeah, that's very well said. I totally co-signed both the Hockenson and Addison analysis, and we'll see. Maybe they get their lead singer back on Monday night. They have kind of a longer layoff. They got the extra day there to maybe get him back on Monday night. That's going to be a tough fantasy decision because you probably won't know until, like, we didn't know until later in the process that we weren't going to get Jefferson. So we'll see if we have any more early indications going into week 12 if Justin Jefferson's going to play on Monday night against the Chicago Bears. But for now, Scott, let's get into the headliners of week 11, starting with Lions 31, Bears 26. Scott, the Bears, with Justin Fields back, put up a pretty good fight in this one. They were actually really entertaining to watch in Detroit. Jared Goff made some mistakes, but ultimately, in the end, the Lions pulled off with an end of regulation drive where they actually ran the ball pretty well to end the game. So this was an interesting one, and I definitely think the Bears doesn't really matter much, but from a watchability standpoint, Scott, they're a lot more interesting with Justin Fields back there.
Yeah, one of the best games of the day. Exciting comeback for the Lions, and kudos to Ben Johnson, as you said, who understood that they had enough time to sprinkle in some running in that late possession they had. A lot of teams just say, we got to throw it every time. And when you run in those situations so often, you're just getting giveaway runs because the defense is tired, the defense isn't prepared for it. But here's the thing with the Lions, okay? Oh, no, Montgomery's back and Gibbs is here. I mean, can this offense support two backs? I got a lot of Montgomery-Gibbs questions today, which I thought maybe they'd be both past that for start-sit, but they should be. today, what is it? Montgomery gets 20, 12 carries and two catches. So 14 opportunities there. I think 14-14, is that what it was, right down the middle? They both had goal line equity. It's a really good offensive line. We like Ben Johnson. Generally, Jared Goff is a plus quarterback. He did not play like one today. He threw three interceptions. They could have had another one that would have gone for a pick six around the goal line. It was bad Goff for about 2.5 hours. He was very good at the end of the game. But they don't mess around with third running backs or fullbacks. They don't throw to second tight ends, generally, stuff like that. This is condensed. It's Sun God. It's Gibbs. It's Montgomery. It wasn't a big Sam Laporta game. He did have a two-point conversion to tap you on the shoulder on the way out. But pretty condensed offense, a quarterback who doesn't run. And so this is what we like for fantasy. Good offense, good line, good play caller, and we know where the ball is going. Now, the Bears, I'm not going to throw a parade for them, but Justin Fields gives them a chance. It's no surprise that DJ Moore had his first touchdown in a while. Fields did a lot of running in this game, which you like to see, because there was a kind of an idea of, is he not going to run? Are they telling him not to run? Where are we with Fields the runner? And so we saw him spread his wings today. So bottom line, I think you feel good about the Lions offense like we have all year. And you can stop asking me Montgomery Gibbs questions, because there's people who are really struggling at running back. I need to help them out. I can't help you out, Montgomery and Gibbs, manager. You guys are already set. And now DJ Moore, who was kind of on the scene too. I was asked some DJ Moore questions today, unless that Moore was really Rondell Moore or Herman Moore or somebody else. And I think DJ Moore becomes a must start now that Fields is back, because he's going to target more. 9 of the 22 targets went to their best receiver, as they should.
Yeah, as they should. And Tyson Bagent was doing a good job of peppering Moore, but it wasn't downfield stuff. And like, that's where really we get these ceiling games from Justin Fields and DJ Moore is the vertical passing stuff. Obviously, Fields also gets there as a rusher. You know, there was a headline this morning where it's like, oh, the Bears need to be blown away in order to not take a quarterback and to move on from Justin Fields. They need to be blown away by a prospect. Well, I mean, they probably will be. Like, you know, these guys seem pretty good coming out of college. Drake May, Caleb Williams, these guys seem pretty good. Like, I think we'll probably get there, and then the Bears will have a new quarterback. But I do think Justin Fields is one of these guys that's going to be in our lives for a while. Like, I think we'll be talking about Justin Fields next year. I think we'll be talking about him every now and again, because he does have a really tantalizing skill set. And in a game where obviously their weak point here for the Lions is their secondary, that is an issue for them. They can still rush the passer pretty well, but they struggle to cover on the back end. Fields, and especially now that he has DJ Moore, can make good in these particular matchups. So I think that's good to see for these guys down the stretch. I think you're going to see a lot of good games between these two. In the Bears' backfield, no surprise, Khalil Herbert returns and leads the team in carries with 16. I think we'll continue to – well, leads the running backs, I should say, in carries, because Justin Fields had 18 rush attempts. But 6 rush attempts for each of Roschon Johnson and Deontay Foreman, who did pop in a touchdown. I think that's probably how we'll see this rotation go down the stretch.
I'm shocked the NFL isn't giving us this game on Thanksgiving. I feel like the Lions and Bears play like every other year on Thanksgiving, although it's going to be Lions and Packers. We'll get to the Packers in a second. But you're welcome, America. The Lions are 8-2. The last time they were 8-2, John F. Kennedy was president.
We are not going to get the Bears on Thanksgiving against the Lions, but they are still in primetime island game Monday Night Football next week, Scott. So the Bears are, Andy Behrens is, and his Bears are still kicking around our lives.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Justin Fields is going to play like this, I'm fine with it, man. I get to watch DJ Moore. I guess gets to watch Justin Fields. I think a lot of teams screwed up, maybe not throwing a token offer for Dante Foreman at the trade deadline. He's a good running back, man. I know he's not really fantasy playable now that they have a crowded backfield, but he's a good football player too. The Bears are competitive. They're not a good team, but they're competitive. I think they're quasi watchable. There are 4 or 5 teams I would say, no, get them off my screen before I'd say that about Chicago.
Yeah, 100%. And their defense has improved. Charles McDonald talked about that on the preview episode. Their defense is a little bit better than it was to start the year. So that is great to see. All right, next game up, you mentioned the Packers. Let's talk about them here. Packers 23, Chargers 20. Scott, the Chargers had a beautiful opportunity here in week 11 with chaos hitting the Bengals and the Bills in different areas. Obviously, Bills fire their offensive coordinator. The Bengals lose Joe Burrow for the rest of the season. What an absolute bummer there that we haven't talked about on the podcast yet, but obviously that stinks. And, you know, the Jets are the Jets. We don't expect the Jets to really get in the mix here. The Chargers had a golden opportunity to get themselves in the mix here in terms of the AFC playoff race with these other contenders faltering. And this is just, it was just such a classic Chargers letdown spot. And here we are again, you know, Brandon Staley's sniping at reporters in the post-game press conference about, don't ask me about who's calling the defensive plays. I'm going to be calling the defensive plays. So you don't have to ask that question. Like, legit heat. I mean, there's just a clear sign of a deep, deep rot here for the Chargers. I almost don't even want to talk. I just like almost don't even want to talk about the damn Chargers because it's like, who cares? But I don't know. Packers, Chargers, you tell me where you want to take this one.
I guess we'll get the Chargers out of the way. The Chargering, every Charger game feels the same, where they look like they're going to win at some point, and then they don't, and you're let down. Quentin Johnston had a drop. It wasn't the worst drop in the world. He had to slightly adjust to the ball, but it hit him in the hands twice. It's a pass you have to catch, and it's the type of drop where you could understand Justin Herbert thinking, okay, the next time I'm going to throw to somebody else. The problem is there just aren't many somebody else's on this team other than Keenan Allen, who did his 10 for 116, a touchdown, 16 targets. What an unfair weapon he is in fantasy. If you went with the older receivers this year, it's funny how all those second-year receivers have been busts this year pretty much. Sometimes it's because of the quarterbacks. But if you had ignored that entire group and said, no, I want Keenan Allen. I want Adam Thielen. I want some of these older guys. Your wallet wouldn't fit all your hundreds right now. Do you know anything about Stone Smart? Because he looked really good on that 51-yard touchdown. Like, where did this guy come from? But that's he only had 3 targets, didn't do anything else. But I feel like every Charger game is the same. And their playable list of fantasy players is really small. It's Herbert. And even then, I get start sick questions on Herbert every week. He's not automatic. It's obviously Keenan Allen. It's obviously Austin Eckler. And then everybody else, you have to talk yourself into it. And once the bye weeks are over, you won't be talking yourself into any of those guys.
Look, I'm the first guy to let receivers off the hook for a couple of drops and stuff like that. You know, I've written like a whole article about why it's like our negativity bias and everything like that, that we harp on drops. But I mean, perfect example, Keenan Allen dropped a pass in this game. Nobody's really talking about that. I mean, because Keenan Allen, when he gets other opportunities, is open. You know, Keenan Allen wins on his routes. Keenan Allen goes 10 catches in this game. Like, that's why I'm sure this seems like unfair to people for me to criticize Quentin Johnston about drops when I've just said, like, I'm usually letting receivers off the hook for this stuff, but drops are overrated when you do other stuff that makes the drops worth living with. Quentin Johnston isn't doing anything. I mean, I've said it on the show. It's like they're playing with 10 guys on offense right now because he doesn't get open. He doesn't make contested catches. And this is not the first like embarrassing woof drop that he had. And obviously it couldn't have come at a worse time, like on third down in the final drive as we're trying to win this game. So just brutal stuff. It's a bad first round pick right now. You know, obviously it's too early in his career to write him off completely, but you know, it was a bad pick because they needed real help and injuries have just exposed that he was not ready to play. So it is what it is, man. It with Quentin Johnston, I mean, I don't think it's going to get better at any point this year. Like, the light's not just going to magically flip on, and it's not the drops. Like, I couldn't care. I mean, I could care less. I certainly wish he wouldn't drop passes, but if he was doing anything else to make those drops worth living with, we wouldn't even be having a conversation about him dropping the football here. But and that's like the Keenan Allen part of this all is other players on this roster are making mistakes too. Like Eckler fumbles the ball, Keenan Allen drops a pass. Like I said, you know, their offensive line has its fair, more than fair share of blown assignments. So I don't know, just it's all bad. And you can tell, like, with Brandon Staley sniping the press conference, there's a deep, deep rot, like I said, in the Chargers right now. Like, this era of Chargers football is over. Brandon Staley will get fired. I don't know when it's going to happen, but he will likely get fired at some point. It's just a matter of if, not when. Or a matter of when, not if.
Shout out to Keenan Allen, who I don't know how you could have got to this point before the season, but it's his 11th year in the NFL and he's having his best season. He was a number 3 fantasy receiver into today. He'll probably go up after this game. He led the NFL in reception. Now, of course, the run out because of Williams getting hurt, his market share is just through the roof. But, you know, again, a guy doing it at 31, you know, we were used to Keenan Allen being the, oh yeah, wide receiver 15, wide receiver 17, wide receiver 13, that type of guy. He was wide receiver 3 before today, and he's going to have his best year at age 31. And that's a complete contrast to the Packers, where it's like everybody's a rookie. Everybody's a second-year player. They lose Aaron Jones in this game. He hardly influenced this game, only had 5 touches. And so the good news is, hey, Jaden Reed scored another touchdown. And they used him proactively on the ground. And hey, Christian Watson finally scored another touchdown. Hey, Romeo Doubs had a touchdown. Dontavian Wicks was pretty good. Jordan Love was really good. You're supposed to be really good against the Chargers, and he was. 8.1 yards per attempt, no interceptions, rating over 108. If you stream Jordan Love, you're happy. That's all great. The thing that's tricky is they phone booked with the distribution. Nobody had more than six targets. They had 10 different guys. Now, with Reed, you didn't mind it so much because he had the three carries. He busted that long run and the one touchdown. So he had seven opportunities. But you know, last year, a big part of Watson's breakout rookie year was that Aaron Rodgers was like, you're coming with me, kid. You you're my wingman. I'm bringing you here. You're going to have a great season. And they just don't operate like that. And when you're successful spreading the ball around, there's nobody who demands targets here. There's guys you can target, but there's nobody who demands targets. So what's going to happen is somebody's going to go to Jordan Reed again, good player. Somebody's going to go to Christian Watson because he scored this week, and they're going to be disappointed when they have washout games. They don't have anybody in this offense that they prioritize. So even when a bunch of them get home or get quasi home in week 11, I don't know what we do with them going forward.
I'll keep a candle lit for Jaden Reed because I think he's a really, really good player. According to Marcus Grant, who I think got it from Next Gen Stats, he ran one more route than Romeo Doubs today, which is an improvement because, like, Jaden Reed's awesome. He's a really, really good player, and I think he could be a guy that becomes the central force of this offense to end the season. But you're right. Still at this moment, he has six targets, which is tied with Romeo Doubs. It's tied with Luke Musgrave, and it's a wide, wide distribution, as you said. Even, I mean, and like, it makes sense too, because Dontavian Wicks, their other rookie receiver, I really like Dontavian Wicks, and he shows some, makes some mistakes every now and again, but he shows some really good flashes. He has a team high 91 yards on the day. So I agree with you. We don't have anybody in the Packers right now that is a, like, Christian Watson was drafted to be that guy, and he's verifiably not that guy, like a set it and forget it reliable guy you can set your watch by. He's not that guy. I don't think he's probably ever going to be that guy, but I think all of these guys emerging, if they could keep it sustainable, would be good for the offense. Part of me also thinks, though, yeah, obviously good performance from Jordan Love, who I don't think has been as bad as people think. He'll probably embarrass me on Thanksgiving now that I said that, but I don't think he's been as bad. I don't think he's been as bad as people think he has been this year. But how much of this is the Chargers pass defense, which is that defense that Brandon Staley's going to the mat. Like, he's going to bat for, you know, I'm calling this defense. It's been an embarrassing defense basically ever since he's taken the job. So how much of that is the Chargers defense versus, like, Jordan Love and the Packers taking a step forward? I don't know.
The reason why I'm willing to give Jordan Love the benefit of the doubt is I thought he really took a step forward the previous week against a Pittsburgh defense on the road that we respect, and they easily could have won that. I realize he threw the pick at the end of that game, but I thought he acquitted himself very well in that game. We'll learn a lot about Love on Thanksgiving because the Lions will get after it in the pocket. But if you can last for a few seconds in the pocket, you can find people downfield. Certainly the Bears had no problem with that, and we saw the Chargers throw the ball all over the yard the previous week. So there should be opportunities for Love to make plays. You back to Reed for a second. When you watch Reed, when he does have the ball in his hands, it's exciting, right? He's fast. Yeah. And it's interesting. I look back at his pre-draft scouting report, and NFL.com was projecting him as a fourth or fifth round pick. The NFL comparison was Greg Ward, who I bet like 90% of our listeners don't even remember Greg Ward. I don't know, man. He looks like he went in the second round of the Packers, pick 50. He looks every bit the part of a second round receiver, which is kind of like almost like a quasi first round receiver, the way draft strategy has changed. I think he has a chance to be special.
Me too. I've been on Jaden Reed for a long time. Andy Behrens and I said after the draft, like, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the best Packers receiver, which at the time everybody hated that take because Christian Watson was, you know, the golden god at that point. But three rush attempts for 46 yards today, you know, like, I expected Reed to take a step forward as a receiver, but the fact that he's like making plays out in space really wasn't his calling card in college. So to see him doing that, I think, is even more impressive. So I'm really excited about Jaden Reed to end the season here. All right, next game up, Jaguars 34, Titans 14. Scott, we've been begging for a eruption spot from the damn Jags passing game, but we finally got one here. Trevor Lawrence, not only does he throw for 262 yards and two touchdowns, he also runs in two touchdowns. Both of his touchdowns went to Calvin Ridley as well. So, look, like I said, we have been begging for some kind of, like, give us a blow-up game, Jacksonville, and they finally got one here against the Titans. And it was obviously a good matchup as well.
Right. And we know the Titans are the classic funnel defense. You're going to have to throw over the top of them. Also, some indicators, I think Scott Barrett of Fantasy Points was somebody who pointed this out, of how much more productive Ridley has been this year when Zay Jones is in the lineup. But Jones didn't do a lot, 4 for 20 on 4 targets, but maybe it helped the scheming. Maybe it helped to get Ridley open. Ridley has that blow up game, 7 for 103, 2 touchdowns, 9 targets. And Lawrence, who hadn't scored more than 20 points in any fantasy game this year, I think he was over 30. Now, you don't expect him to run a bunch of touchdowns in, but you expect him to run in the occasional touchdown. He'd probably been unlucky in that department. Now, unfortunately, if you needed Jaguars today, you had to be on Lawrence or Ridley because everybody else came in under expectations. I think it was J.J. Zacharyson who was pointing this out, that Travis Etienne, it's really been touchdown deodorant for him. He hasn't had a great efficiency season, but because he's had so much opportunity with touches and so much work at the goal line, it's masked his season. Like him and Tony Pollard are kind of having a similar season. Maybe Rich Rebar was in on this as well. I forget who made the point. One of those two guys, friends of the show, that Pollard and Etienne were having similar years. Just Etienne had touchdowns and Pollard didn't. So nobody's mad at Travis Etienne. And today,
nobody would have thought that, right? Like, if you're just looking at the fantasy boxers, be like, what are you talking about? Like, these guys are having the same type of season.
No, I'm not trading Travis Etienne for Tony Pollard. Get out of here. You know, no, I'm not doing that. So it's just interesting that Etienne doesn't run well with the touchdowns today. And he has kind of a Travis Etienne game. You know, under 4 yards a carry, had a couple of catches, 3 catches that went nowhere. It's just nice. Look, I was less on Ridley than a lot of people. He was like a kind of a semi-fade for me, but I don't enjoy Calvin Ridley not playing well. I don't enjoy Trevor Lawrence not playing well. Trevor Lawrence is supposed to be a better than average quarterback, if not a star, if not an MVP candidate. And Calvin Ridley is supposed to be that rare isolation outside receiver that teams are all begging and screaming to get. So it was just nice to see them do what they do. On the flip side.
So on the Zay Jones thing, by the way, because I have an explanation for this.
Sure.
And you do deserve a lot of credit, Scott, for being like actually cautious about the Ridley thing. And I've owned up to it on the podcast of how I made myself uncautious about this thing when I remember doing the trade reaction last year at the deadline, being like, I got to try to remain cautiously optimistic about Ridley. And then as you know, I'm wont to do sometimes, I threw that caution to the wind. What an idiot. Anyways, on the Zay Jones stuff, John Shipley pointed this out, that Calvin Ridley has 3 100-yard games this year. All have come in games that Zay Jones has played. And the reason for this, and we talked about this, I think, with Andy on the People's Panic Meter last week. I mean, obviously, we talk about the damn Jags every week on that particular episode. But Ridley has faced more press coverage than almost any other receiver this year because he has had to line up as that isolated X receiver. You know, when you're on the line of scrimmage, you're not getting moved around a ton because Zay Jones has been in and out of the lineup. And you just think about the other receivers on the roster, Scott, like Christian Kirk, very good player, but Christian Kirk is a slot receiver. Zay Jones can win. He's not a great player, but he can win outside. Look at the rest of the Jags roster. It's like their fourth receiver is Jamal Agnew, who's a gadget player and a converted cornerback. So you're not exactly going to line that guy up outside. So when Zay Jones is out there, they actually have somebody who can line up outside and then they can and run those like go routes and the comebacks and the curls that Ridley has basically all been running. He's basically just been running routes like he's Gabe Davis or like MVS or something, which you don't want. Like you can't, because he's their only verifiable man coverage beater outside. So because Zay Jones is out there, it does, like you said, give them the benefit of like scheming things up and moving Ridley into bunches or into stacks or like, all right, he's going to be the flanker and give him a free release sometimes. Have him run a crossing route for God's sake. So the tough part with Zay Jones is that he did get like arrested for a domestic incident. I don't know all the details. So I don't want to exactly speak on it, but I mean, that could definitely take him off the field at any time. That is a little problematic, but obviously when Zay Jones plays, it does allow them to do more things with Ridley, which it shouldn't take until week 11 for Press Taylor, the offensive coordinator, to figure that out. But here we are. So that's the reason I think we have the Zay Jones, Calvin Ridley split.
Is the cupboard just empty with the Titans? You can play DeAndre Hopkins and maybe not feel great about it. He has a long touchdown to save his day today. Derrick Henry's running nowhere. Levis has started to look, after the first 2 games were great. And I realized, look, they had a juicy YPA today, but he's taken too many sacks, turning the ball over too much. I don't know. It's the Titans. I had such grounded expectations for Levis, and he played so well in the first 2 games. I'm like, okay, maybe I need to change my mind. Maybe Levis is far more ready to play than I thought. And then he throws up a stinker against Tampa Bay and a team that really should be able to throw on. And then today against Jacksonville, I felt like the Jaguars 34-14 is misleading. This felt like this final was 40-0. This was a beatdown.
Yeah, I don't feel particularly good about it. I mean, yeah, their defensive tackle, Jeffrey Simmons, caught one of the touchdowns. You know, like, that's where we're at with the Titans offense right now. I don't have anything good to say, like any sort of like, oh, yeah, this, that, or the other. I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is still a solid player, and like Will Levis will give him chances downfield. And like, that is basically all you're working with this offense. And that obviously impacts Derrick Henry. And I don't know. I mean, at this point, people who drafted Derrick Henry, they kind of know what they're living with at this stage.
In my guillotine league, I dropped him. And I said, let him be on somebody else's team. So the Titans, their famous funnel, I'll point this out, it got Ridley going, it got Lawrence going. So who's going to be the beneficiary next week? The Colts. I'm curious how aggressive they'll be throwing the ball, because we know it's really the Jonathan Taylor show now, but maybe a big Michael Pittman week. I would hope you don't need Gardner Minshew in a week where everybody plays. Then they get the Dolphins. Heaven help them against the Dolphins the following week. Texans, Seahawks, Texans. So C.J. Stroud gets to throw the ball against these guys a couple of times, and we'll be talking C.J. Stroud in a minute.
Yeah, Dolphins, probably the fastest team in the NFL. I think the Titans are in the conversation with the Patriots as the slowest team in the NFL, so that should be an entertaining game. All right, next one up here, you mentioned C.J. Stroud, who will play the Jaguars next week, so that's going to be a pretty important game. Texans 21, Cardinals 16. You know, C.J. Stroud is not perfect in this game. If we want to be real, like, while he's been making this MVP push, he has made a few, like, rookie mistakes every now and again. But the great thing about C.J. Stroud is that he has a short memory, the classic, like, oh, quarterback has a short memory, and he goes back out there and, like, wins the damn game even when he makes some of these mistakes. And his team definitely helped him out today, keeping Kyler Murray in check, keeping them from a game-winning drive and stuff like that. So, man, C.J. Stroud continues his impressive rookie season. Tank Dell, baby. Oh, man, it's not quite the same as the Zay Jones, Calvin Ridley dynamic, but it's not too dissimilar when last week Tank Dell gets 14 targets and only catches 6 of them because he had to play that X receiver position with Nico Collins out. Collins gets back in here and he has a fine day on his own, 7 catches for 65 yards, whatever. But him being back there allows Tank Dell to like be moved around the formation. And this sounds like a hot take and like a weird hot take, but I think Tank Dell might be the best receiver in the NFL right now on outbreaking routes, like corners, deep outs, comebacks. He's just like money on these things. And those are the big boy routes, Scott, and Tank Dell is not a particularly big boy.
Yeah, you know, Stroud shows he's human with the 3 picks. It's just so weird because he hasn't made these throws. He hasn't had this type of game, but still he gets, 9.1 yards per attempt. He throws for well over 300 yards. He had like 250 in the first half or something like that. And for fantasy purposes, this usage is so concentrated, right? 29 targets go to Dell, Collins, and Woods. And then a sprinkling of targets went to Dalton Schultz, who had the stop drop, and he rolled his way into the end zone. So in a really bad tight end day, I realize there's more tight end players to come. Obviously, some people are still on bye. But if you got Schultz for 32 yards and a touchdown, that put you ahead of most of your opponents because there's such skank out there for tight end. So Houston can move the ball, sustain offense, and we know where the ball is going when they are throwing it. They're not throwing. And you know, Singletary has been, what do you do with him? He has a really bad game. Then he has a really great game. Today was kind of the tiebreaker. And, you know, 22 for 112 and a touchdown, a couple of short catches. Obviously, Pierce isn't getting his job back. Singletary has earned the first chair there. So the Texans, you know, before the season, you would have thought, I know you and I have always been card-carrying Nico Collins fans, and I think we thought Stroud wouldn't embarrass himself. He's obviously much better than anybody had a realistic my hope before the season was that he would play well enough that Collins would have value, or maybe Tank Dell in the deep league would have value, or maybe Dalton Schultz would have value. I didn't think Stroud would be somebody who would drive the offense and be a teammate elevator right away. That was an unrealistic expectation to have. He's obviously surpassed what we expected from him, so it's green light on these guys. Can't wait to watch them play Jacksonville next week. Arizona, man. You know, Kyler, I thought he played better last week than I expected. I thought he was okay today. I thought he left a few plays on the field. He's still kind of feeling things out. But he's not on the same page with Marquise Brown. It's just so weird to see Greg Dortch be their leading receiver. Yeah, Rondale Moore had the early touchdown. I don't know, did he get hurt in this game? He only had one target. He never targeted after that. When he got the touchdown, I'm like, oh, great. You know, nice sleeper pays off in Rondale Moore. He does nothing the rest of the game. James Conner looks like what he is. He's reliable, but there's no explosion. I never expected James Conner play to get to the second level. Kyler is competitive. Kyler is running proactively. He makes the Cardinals much more watchable. And look, you know I love Joshua Dobbs, but there's some juice they have with Kyler Murray that they didn't have before. I think Cardinals have a chance to beat anybody. They almost took the Texans out in Survivor, which would have been a big thing today. But how come him and Brown, who go back to college, how come they're not on the same page? And your Trey McBride, 5 for 43 on 7 targets against a Houston defense, had been giving away against the tight end that actually came in under his receiving prop. That's a mild disappointment. Where are we at with the Arizona offense 2 games back with Kyler Murray?
Yeah, I think they obviously, you said it really well, they've got more juice right now than they did. Certainly, certainly with Clayton Tune and even with Josh Dobbs, too. The thing with Marquise Brown is he's got like a 17.4 air yards per target figure, according to Next Gen Stats. And like he is almost only getting downfield looks, which, you know, I get it. Rondale Moore has a big 48 yard reception here. But like in terms of consistent downfield players, he's really your only guy. You've got Trey McBride, who's breaking out as a tight end. He's 5 for 43 today. He's kind of living in that short and intermediate area. Michael Wilson doesn't play in this game. He's been more short and intermediate, almost like Michael Pittman ish in breaking routes over the middle. He's been more of that player than like a downfield X receiver, although he can make big downfield catches. So I think the margin for error for Hollywood Brown is just going to be really thin, while Kyler Murray is good, but not like all the way back. And he's playing in this vertical receiver role. I think he's going to have games like this, 2 for 18. He's probably going to have some other bigger games though, too. It's going to be tough to predict him.
Yeah, it's funny with air yards. Sometimes people call them prayer yards because they're downfield plays that do not have the highest chance of being completed. But of course, when they are completed, they can make your day. But I'd like to see them use your term. Hollywood Brown needs some layup targets too. You just don't want him to be somebody running 9 routes. You need him to have some underneath component to his game.
All right, next game up here, Bills 32, Jets 6. Keep this one in the headliners because it's really important that the Bills beat the Jets, okay? Couldn't mess around with this one, just got to get it done. I think we get some good signals out of the Bills in this win. 27 combined carries for Latavius Murray and James Cook. They ran the ball pretty well. Ty Johnson even got in the mix here with a receiving touchdown out of the backfield. Like, that's going to be important for them. No Gabe Davis targets, another quiet game for Steph Diggs, but Dalton Kincaid shows up with 6 receptions and a big play for Khalil Shakir as well.
Yeah, the tricky thing here was that to get to the Buffalo touchdowns, right? They scored 3 touchdowns. One of them is Cook receiving, one of them is Ty Johnson receiving, one of them is Shakir on the breakaway 81-yard catch at the end of the game that padded the stats. But Diggs was very quiet. Kincaid, you'll take 6 for 46, but no touchdown. And you just never know when Gabe Davis is going to disappear, and this is one of those games. Diggs did not look particularly engaged in this game. Looked a little bit frustrated, but whatever. They didn't need him. The thing with the Bills in this game, a couple times they had possessions where you might want to go for it on 4th down in plus territory, and the Jets are so bad on offense that I think once you get over a 1-score lead on the Jets, the game's pretty much over. Zach Wilson has no chance. Breece Hall has no chance. It was really frustrating to watch Garrett Wilson today. But back to the Bills, they kind of are what they are. Cook has looked really good the last few weeks, and it's nice to see him have a receiving role here as well. He's probably a solid running back too for me going forward. I would think Diggs would pick it up. I would think Kincaid would still maintain fantasy juice even when maybe Knox comes back. They're not exactly the same type of tight end. And I don't know how anybody could play Gabe Davis with any confidence. Even Shakir off that nice long touchdown today. Once bye weeks are over, you're not going to play him. You should probably drop him for a running back lottery ticket or something like that. Allen did not run a lot proactively. Again, once you get ahead of the Jets, you kind of like back off. And you saw them, Latavius Murray get 10 carries in this game. They were pretty much playing clock ball in the second half, I felt.
Yeah, and listen, for good reason too. Zach Wilson, 7 for 15. Tim Boyle gets in this game. Mm. 7 for 14 and an interception. Robert Saleh says he's not sure who's going to start on Friday. I can't believe we have to watch. I mean, we don't have to.
Thomas Moorhead start? He was 1 for 1 for 18 yards. Is that your new
right?
Can the Jets just run? Can take a knee every man? There, as somebody who needed Breece Hall, as somebody who's still starting Garrett Wilson, 8 targets, 2 catches, 9 yards, man. When Wilson got benched, I was just at the point like, okay, fine. Anything but Zach Wilson. I've had it with Zach Wilson, and Tim Boyle was worse.
Yeah, because he's Tim Boyle.
I don't want to pick on Tim Boyle. I mean, he's thrown into an impossible situation, but
yeah.
Zach Wilson threw up 5.4 yards per attempt. it took five sacks. And then, you know, at least Boyle didn't take the sacks, but 2.4 yards per attempt. If you had told me Tim Boyle was really a receiver who used to play quarterback in high school, I would have believed you.
Yeah, I mean, give me a break. He's Tim Boyle. He's only there because he knows Aaron Rodgers and knows the offense. Like, he played under Nathaniel Hackett before. That's it. We'll see. Maybe Trevor Siemian comes off the practice squad for Black Friday.
Heebie-jeebies. I know they hired him because he's got the familiarity with Aaron Rodgers, and nobody expected their season to be off script four snaps into the year with Rodgers getting hurt. Let me ask you this. I know we're all going to make excuses for Garrett Wilson. I think they're legitimate. He was going to the moon with Aaron Rodgers. That, you know, the rug was pulled out from under him. But all of the sophomore receivers, and Dotson had a touchdown today, still did just about nothing. Pickens, Olave, maybe he'll be more interesting if Winston ever gets back on the field, but it sounds like they probably want to go back to Derek Carr. Is there a takeaway from the second year receiver group being so, I mean, you would have been better off to avoid every one of them, or just was the bad runouts of some of these guys. Is there a takeaway here, or is it just one of those things that it just fell a certain way? Like, sometimes you go to a roulette wheel and it comes up red nine times in a row. Is this just red coming up nine times in a row?
I mean, some of these guys were overrated. Like, Watson was overrated. Pickens was a little overrated. Not that, I mean, Watson went way too high. Pickens, it was fine. He was like a sixth, seventh round pick type. That was whatever. He didn't go crazy high. But, you know, I definitely think that we talk about guys being like quarterback proof and offense proof in some ways. And this is not real. Like, I'm sorry, but you put like Justin Jefferson in the Saints offense with Jameis Winston checking down to Alvin Kamara all the time. Like, he's going to not produce the same as he will in the Vikings offense. Like, it just is what it is. And I'm not saying Chris Olave is Justin Jefferson, but he can be really, really good. I think these guys, we bake in progression with players when, and even they might be taking a step individually. Like, I think Garrett Wilson's playing great this year, but what do you want him to do in this situation? Right. So, I don't think there's like a grand takeaway other than just like, let's take a beat with second year receivers sometimes. And like, by the way, I think all of these guys, not all of them, but most of them can go on to have great careers and be really, really good players. It just might not necessarily be like step one, step two, step three, step four. And like every year they're just going up an escalator a little.
Yeah. The linear progression, like a plane taking off. The one, I guess there's two guys I regret picking as proactively as I did. One was Jahan Dotson, because I went from he's a good player to maybe he can be their number one, and that's just ridiculous. It's right. Not true. It's obviously Terry McLaurin. And the other one I regret, I love Chris Olave. I loved his tape at Ohio State. Obviously, I know you're a big Olave guy, and when you and I agree on somebody, I probably become stronger in the take, as I think is perfectly reasonable. But last year, in so many metrics, Andy Dalton had a better year than Derek Carr. Derek Carr was bad last year. And I think I just wanted to look at it as like, well, Carr's getting a change of scenery at the right time, and Olave's just going to be wide open so often. And I don't think I baked in enough Carr risk to Olave. And that's where I could have maybe taken somebody else. And the thing that hurt, if you missed on a guy like Olave, again, maybe it's not his fault. I don't think all these quarterbacks are playing with average or below average quarterbacks. It's not like any of these guys are failing with stars or MVP candidates or anything like that. If they were, then we'd really have to reevaluate them. But you know, Pittsburgh, there's one touchdown to go around every week. I mean, what are you going to do if you don't catch it? And they don't have that some weeks.
Exactly.
But I feel like Olave, I feel like Carr could have steered me off Olave. I feel like I got that wrong. I will never regret drafting Garrett Wilson, because I'm sure that Aaron Rodgers would have got that guy in the Pro Bowl, if not maybe the top five of fantasy receivers. I know he had a lot of helium to Wilson before the season. I still think it was justified.
Yeah, I agree with you that I probably yada yada Derek Carr a little more than I should have. And, you know, when you start going, well, this or well, that with a quarterback that's attached to your favorite receiver, like, you know, listen to that a little bit. And you're definitely right. I did this, you know. I did the same thing with Calvin Ridley that you just talked about with Jahan Dotson, where like, oh man, he could come in and do like this, 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 and that, and like kind of telling yourself a story about a player and not like basing it in, I guess, facts, or I don't know. It's tough, and these situations are difficult, but that was certainly what I did with Ridley, even though he's not fitting in this discussion. But and he really is coming off his best game, so it is what it is. But you know, there's rocky journeys in every receiver. Every receiver season, there's ups, there's downs, there's stuff like that. Like Chris Olave can probably, he could finish the year really strong. We don't know. And then we don't look back Like, we don't look back at his season as a disappointment. I think some of these guys, it's probably too far gone. Obviously, with Garrett Wilson in particular, like, he was getting a ton of targets, and that was great for a long time, for a little stretch there. And it's like, all right, he has a floor. Well, then he goes 2 for 9 and he fumbles a ball here. And like, there's one out route he had where he's like screaming open and just like so frustrated that he doesn't get the ball. And that just, there was no way to know that that was going to happen. So I don't know if I have like a grand takeaway on the second year receivers, other than definitely like, if you're going to have not, I don't, because even elite quarterback play doesn't guarantee your receiver is going to ball out necessarily. Like, a lot of things have to come together here. And for a situation like the Saints with Olave, it's a great talent. It's an at best mediocre quarterback who you point out is probably on the decline anyways. And it's not a good offensive environment. So there was a lot of warning signs, I think, with Olave that even as talented as he is, there were some holes there in the profile.
For sure. And if you're not taking Olave or Wilson, right, you may have ended up with Jalen Waddle or Devonta Smith, who are getting a little, they've been okay, but they've been getting a little bit squeezed by the number ones being far more important to their teams than the number twos. It's not like, oh, I landed on a good offense. That isn't necessarily a cure-all either, because sometimes you draft a guy who misses or undershoots his expectation for different reasons.
Here's a reality. A lot of your picks in your fantasy draft can fail for a lot of different reasons, some of which you can see coming and some of which you can't. It's a fun game. All right,
speaking of failure, let's get to the failure of the Seahawks and Rams, man.
Yeah, and the final game of the headliners here, Rams 17, Seahawks 16. Geno Smith gets a little banged up in this one. So does Kenneth Walker, who the quote from Pete Carroll here, that he has, quote, a legit shoulder sprain. Kenneth Walker suffered an oblique strain that's legit. That's what Pete Carroll told us. So, I mean, we'll see what that means. He could certainly miss a week. Zach Charbonnet came in here and carried the ball 15 times for 47 yards. He chipped in with 6 catches on 6 targets as well. He would be a guy I think people are going to try to start if there's no Kenneth Walker. Geno Smith also gets banged up. Not only do the Seahawks lose this game, Scott, they also come out of it pretty banged up, which is unfortunate because, again, they're playing the 49ers on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, a very physical team, a division matchup, a game that's going to have playoff implications and seeding implications and all that. Man, did the Seahawks screw this game up at the end where they got to, oh, we can make a long field goal, but let's try to get closer. No, let's just run the ball, kill the clock, and see if Jason Myers can make a 55-yarder, albeit indoors. So, so dumb. I was shocked when I saw Walker get hurt. I was wondering, I wonder what Charbonnet's roster tag is. It must be, what, 60, 70, 80%? It's under 50% right now, which is shocking. Wow. So he'll be
crazy.
That's obviously for the shallower leagues and the medium leagues and every league I'm in, where I generally play in 12 and 14 team leagues. There's no right answer to your league construction. I don't have a decision to make on Charbonnet, but a lot of people will. And if Walker's going to miss even one game, I think you have to aggressively go get Charbonnet. And he's the type of player, as we hit this time of year, I know it's too late to do this now because the Walker news has happened, but you want to, this is where you start, stop caring about depth and that fifth receiver who's playable during bye weeks and all that. Now you want to have guys who are one news item away, one injury away from being automatic starters. And Charbonnet is capable of being that player. So you want to just look around the league and see all the understudy backs who have a skill set to be a bell cow if somebody gets hurt, or at least a primary player, primary touch guy if everybody gets hurt. You don't want to play the, oh, I'll try to out-wrestle everybody on fab, or oh, that guy's more fab than me, I don't get that player. You want those players on your roster a week ahead of time.
100%. Yeah, that is really good advice, and that's the way you got to do it. Cooper Kupp leaves the game. Bummer. I mean, he's just having one of those seasons, and you know, Matthew Stafford also took a hit and was a little hurting after. Neither one of these teams come out with very good vibes, honestly. I know the Rams get the last minute win because the Seahawks missed the field goal, but like, there was a time during this game, Scott, where like I thought to myself, and I hate to even say it out loud, are the Seahawks like in the Steelers zone? Where, like you said, they have one pass. Oh, yeah, right? If you're watching on YouTube, you saw the face Scott made when I said that. That's how I felt when the thought crossed my mind, where it's like, all right, like you said, they have one passing touchdown to go around. They rarely ever get over 300 yards. They have a split backfield, although the Steelers' backfield's been much more interesting of late. They have a split backfield between Kenneth Walker and between Zach Charbonnet. And, like, these are really talented receivers, and they don't have, like, eruption games.
I love that. I love that comp. You can even bring it to, they have a gravitas established coach. They have really strong fan bases, really smart fan bases. The Seahawks are the Steelers. The Seahawks, Steelers are the Seahawks. I love
gross.
That.
I hate it. I don't even know if I believe it. I'm just like,
the smartest fans I know are the Steelers and Seahawks fans. First of all, Seattle, I think, is by far the smartest fan base. I don't think it's even close how smart that fan base is. You know, just something about Seattle where they, when you're born, they just like wire your wrist immediately for the internet. You know, I mean, it's just something about that place, man. You know, it's a very high education level and everything. And the Steelers, of course, they're a gold standard in the NFL. What, they had four coaches in their whole career, the whole franchise history?
Yeah, I don't know if I believe it, but I'm take shopping that the Seahawks offense
I'll believe it for you. You don't have to believe it. I'll believe it for you, Matt.
Then you're a stronger man.
Remember, the great George Costanza said, it's not a lie if you believe it. Well, I believe it. I'll tell you what, we rewatch the games. We try to learn things. Between Drew Lock playing in this game, the Seahawks getting 5.9 yards per attempt, the Rams getting 6.1 yards per attempt, Darrell Henderson running nowhere, 6 carries, 1 yard, but he gets a touchdown, so he bailed out a little bit. I told some people to play Henderson, and that touchdown at least crept you in the neighborhood of 10 points, but he didn't look good. Kupp gets hurt in this game. I might give myself a break and not rewatch this game. I'm surprised it was in the headliners because it was a really different – now, there's nowhere to hide in the late window. There's only 3 games. If this was an early window game, we would have treated it like the Browns and Steelers and just not paid that much attention to it. But yeah. I found this game very difficult to watch. Now, granted, the Jets were impossible to watch, and I don't think there's anything to be gleaned from their rewatch either. But I don't know that either of this team has a significant upside right now.
I think you deserve the break, buddy. Don't rewatch this one.
It's Thanksgiving, right? Yeah. We're all playing a couple days short. We have the quick turnaround. So.
And speaking of Thanksgiving, man, I mean, look, I know Geno hasn't been perfect this year, but I'm really not trying to watch Drew Lock versus the 49ers on Thanksgiving. So I'm going to need the distraction. Okay. We're all going to need distraction. It's holiday season. All right. Let's get through the rest of the games here. We'll pick up the pace, starting with 49ers 27, Bucks 14. This game went about exactly as I expected. Although Brock Purdy comes out of this one with a 158.3 passer rating, a perfect passer rating. And basically, if you started anyone in fantasy, I mean, Deebo Samuel, you get 63 yards. You can't be too greedy. You started anybody in fantasy on this offense, you were pretty happy with it.
Right. I mean, McCaffrey goes back to his touchdown a week minimum. It's so funny how they tried to get him a touchdown in garbage time last week to keep the streak going, but he scores hilarious. Early. Ayuk has the blow up long touchdown and goes well over 100. Is a really great George Kittle game, 8 for 89 on 9 targets. You know, I push back a little bit on the perfect rating for Purdy because he did take 4 sacks, and sacks are more of a quarterback stat than an offensive line stat. But man, the Niners, I don't think anybody thinks they're the best team in football, but they could easily be the second best team or the third best team or the fourth best team. They are right. I think right now, and I'm really enjoying this Lions season, and I hope it goes deep, but I think everybody thinks the 49ers will be one of the last 4 teams standing. It feels like, and I know they lost another key piece on defense today, but it feels like they're just a very complete team that can win a number of styles, can win with a lot of different players. And Purdy is a good player. And in this offense, he becomes a great player.
Buck side of things, like I said, pretty much as expected. Rashad White gets there with a touchdown. It's ugly. Mike Evans gets there with a touchdown. 12 targets, 5 catches, 43 yards. You know, Chris Godwin, you keep praying for the regression. I don't know that it's coming. So Bucks are what they are. This was a pretty predictable outing for what we got out of Tampa Bay, in my opinion.
I mean, I could have said to you beforehand, okay, what running back will have 9 carries for 30 yards and a touchdown and 6 catches for 28 yards? You know, and somehow bail out his fantasy day. Oh, yeah, that's the Rashad White. I think he's already patented that. Nobody else is allowed to do that. He stays on the field. He gets a lot of inefficient volume, and he has touchdown equity. You mentioned Godwin. You know, regression, he's got all these – things pointing to him. I'm sure I wrote about it this week. He's one of the more unlucky players in expected fantasy points to actual. He's got a bunch of red zone targets. There's every reason to keep playing Chris Godwin, but regression. I mean, the NFL only plays 4 months. They only play once a week. You only get those 17 games. You know, not all of them count for fantasy. This regression could be next year. There's no guarantee that he's going to have a 2 or 3 touchdown game or all of a sudden start scoring every week. Even with Baker being okay, he wasn't great today, but give the Niners credit for that. And even with their concentration in Tampa Bay being fairly narrow, I feel like it's going to be – maybe it's just going to be a good process, bad result season for Godwin. That happens too.
All right, next game up here, Dolphins 20, Raiders 13. You certainly thought that the Dolphins were going to wipe the floor with the Raiders, or at least some people did. The spread certainly indicated that they would, but it was a close competitive game. The Raiders had a chance to win it at the end, couldn't get it done. I mean, again, Raiders very what you'd expect out of this one. And the Dolphins come out of this one banged up too. Devon Achan, man, if you played him, it stinks, but he only touches the ball twice and he ends up getting hurt. You know, Tyreek Hill had some injuries in this one. So not a clean performance from the Dolphins, but they do get the win here.
Yeah, I feel bad. I told a lot of people to play Achan, which I think was perfectly reasonable with Jeff Wilson getting scratched. I don't think there were going to be any limitations on Achan, but you can't foresee who's going to get hurt ahead of time. This felt, to use your phrase, like the Dolphins were kind of playing with their food in this game. They did get over 400 yards. Tyreek Hill, when he's even, he's leaving. Somebody tweeted on the Tyreek Hill touchdown, they tweeted where the play was in mid-play. They did a screenshot and said Tyreek Hill scored on this play. And I thought, of course Tyreek Hill scored on that play. Because that's when he hits the turbo button and he zooms past everybody because he's faster insane than stuff. Everybody else on the field. You get Tyreek Hill the ball in space, the play is over. You just put 6 points on the board. And we even had a scare with him, right? He went to the locker room midway through the game. I'm not sure if I heard a report on what it was, but he came back and seemed fine afterwards. What are you telling? I guess Jalen Waddle is just one of those guys too good to bench. Maybe not good enough to play in DVS or for props, but you get to figure at some point. I mean, he had 8 targets today. 4 for 55 is under expectation. He still does have some touchdown equity. Mostert was okay. He handled more volume. They didn't want him to carry the ball in 22 times, but the situation with Achane pushed him to that. But I don't know. Miami, 20 points against the Raiders defense. That's nothing special. Comes in under market. The only guy you were thrilled, I guess your Tua was a par, and Hill was, you know, a really good blow-up game from Tyreek Hill, which you expect almost every other week with him. Everybody else, I feel like you were mildly disappointed.
Yeah, totally. Achane did get a positive report from Mike McDaniel by the training staff, according to him. Just we're being cautious in this one. On the Raider side of things, like, I think we're in a pretty good spot with Davante Adams. Like, we don't need to panic about Davante Adams anymore. Like, he's never going to reach what you wanted when you drafted him, but he's a guy you're playing every single week, and you don't have the same, like, bad vibes that you got with Jalen Waddle right now.
And Jacobs gets 15 touches. Didn't go anywhere, but he still got 15 touches in a game where they were heavy underdogs. I realize it was a competitive game, but Antonio Pierce wants Josh Jacobs to have 20-plus touches most weeks, and even in a game like this where they had to chase it a little bit in the second half, he still was plenty involved. So that makes him – look, the Raiders are what they are. They're competitive. They're playing hard for Pierce. I'll give him that. Pierce was fired up that this was a competitive game because I'm sure in his heart of hearts he knows how outgunned they are in talent against Miami, and they have to play at Miami. Miami's off a bye. It was just a setup game for the Raiders to get blown out, and they made it a competitive game. Pierce isn't going to go to the podium and say, hey, competitive game, you know, moral victory. He's not going to say any of that. But he's going to feel pretty good about where this team is 3 weeks into his regime. I think he has a decent chance to keep this job.
I totally agree with you. Not for nothing that it's probably financially beneficial for.
For sure. Yeah, they're paying a lot of coaches. They got a lot of divorces, a lot of exes on the payroll right now.
Next game up here, if I could get divorced from the Steelers and the Browns game, I definitely would. Browns 13, Steelers 10. I mean, I don't know what you want to say about this game, Scott.
It felt like 3-0. Hey, Jalen Warren is popping. Only had the 9 carry. I realized most of it was on the one long run, but still, I mean.
Can't take it away?
129, a touchdown. He had 3 catches. He's better than Najee Harris, and they seem to realize that now. Man, I know you're a big Deontay Johnson fan. I'm certainly a Pickens fan. I don't know if I'd go to the moon for him, but I know he can play. Freiermuth comes back. You can't play any of the Steelers. There's no setup where I'm going to be like, okay, any of the Steeler pass catchers. You can certainly play Warren. You can even squint and play Harris because he's going to get double-digit touches more often than not. Their winning path is going to be the same as it always is. Play ugly, shorten the game, run the ball, limit Kenny Pickett's mistakes, which I guess they did. I mean, he took 3 sacks. He didn't turn the ball over. They'll live with that. They didn't, you know, they gave themselves a chance. That's the way their idea of winning this game. Mike Tomlin was probably like, let's win this game 13-10. They lost the game 13-10. On the flip side, look, Dorian Thompson-Robinson, he didn't ask for this. He didn't think he'd be a starter in his rookie season. 3.8 yards per attempt. It's actually amazing that Elijah Moore, David Njoku, Amari Cooper had some production in this game, in part because they were targeted. They were, 30 of the 41 targets went to those 3 guys, but none of them were efficient. The running backs didn't go anywhere. Ford, I guess he scored in that touchdown. I didn't see it. this is a 13-10 final. It felt like 3-0 to me.
Yeah. I mean, they had the over under was what, like 32.5? And I was like, oh, still
never scared it. Never scared it. Yep.
All right. Next game up here. Giants 31, Commanders 19. The Tommy DeVito Giants, Scott, take down Sam Howell and the Commanders. I mean, what a game. What of all the games that happened this NFL season, this is one for the books, buddy.
I love it. Tommy DeVito, 9.5 yards per attempt, 3 touchdowns, no picks, takes 9 sacks. Him and Sam Howell got together and said, Sam Howell said, look, I'm taking 4 sacks today. DeVito's like, I got you covered, man. Don't worry. Nobody will talk about that.
So early, I think five or six in the first quarter, at least five or six. Oh,
man, unbelievable. I'm just glad to see Barkley have a chance. I'm glad to see the Giants have a chance to matriculate the ball down the field. As the late, great Hank Stram would say, totally using the word matriculate wrong, but it's become a part of NFL lore, and God love them, NFL films, the Sables. Darius Slayton makes a play. Barkley catches the 2 touchdowns, gets 18 touches, well over 100 total yards. So, you know, Barkley's back in play. You can't really play anybody else here, but at least, and again, DeVito didn't ask for this. He started the season as the third quarterback, and they have a good backup in Taylor. Tyrod Taylor's a good backup quarterback. They never thought Tommy DeVito would have to play. So I felt good to see him get a win. On the flip side, you know, Brian Robinson Jr., we know, generally not a pass catcher. He has the big game at Seattle, that long touchdown catch, which nobody saw coming. And then this game, 9 targets, 7 catches. Washington did a little phone book with, 13 players, I think, they targeted. So even though Howell had some volume, he threw a lot of passes. Howell had that really competitive touchdown run, but it sunk all the receivers. If you had to play Logan Thomas desperately at tight end, you were fine, but McLaurin was a disappointment. I don't think anybody can play Jahan Dotson at this point. I like Curtis Samuel maybe as a sleeper. He gets ejected from this game, you know, 1 for 5 on 2 targets and didn't play for like 35 minutes or whatever it was. Washington, congratulations. This is the one time all year you're going to be favored by 7 points against a team that really couldn't do anything right. And you threw up this stinker where only Robinson got home. I mean, I guess Howell was okay. The touchdown run bailed him out. You probably got the fantasy score you were expecting from Howell, but I was hoping Washington at this point in the year, when you think of how well Howell has played lately, he's trimmed the sack some. I would hope that would mean that McLaurin would come along for the ride, or Dotson would emerge, or Samuel, who's been hurt. Logan Thomas has been okay. But this Washington offense, as much as more often than not, it seems like they're moving the ball, I don't think there's that much fantasy juice here.
No, there's not. I mean, this is ridiculous. The giant box score. I just pulled it up as you were talking. That's why I started laughing. Like, it is a phone book. I mean, literally, dude, this is like biblical how long this is. I mean, my God, it's absurd. The target tree here in damn Washington. I mean, honestly, it's a joke. It's bad for the offense. Like that. It's not even just like I couldn't care less. Like I like Terry McLaurin. I like Jahan Dotson. Like Curtis Samuel, like these guys. I'm not making this complaint because I have them on my fantasy teams. I don't have them on that many fantasy teams or whatever. I couldn't care less about that part. It's just like, this is bad for the offense. It's not a good offense. It's not a well-prepared, well-designed, or anything offense. Like, people who would just say, like, oh, yeah, just go ahead and fire Ron Rivera right now. They'll fire Ron Rivera. Just fire Ron Rivera and put Eric Bieniemy in charge of the team, see if he can be a head coach. Not watching the games. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's a nonsense offense.
You have to watch them on Thursday because they're playing at Dallas.
Oh, what a beautiful transition to the final game here. Cowboys 33, Panthers 10. Yeah, Sam Howell actually will find a way on a national like highlight game to somehow carve up the Cowboys. That's a thing that could happen here. Cowboys 33, Panthers 10. Again, another very predictable result. Tony Pollard gets in the end zone. Who cares? He only has 12 carries, pretty predictable in terms of his workload. But yeah, Dallas gets the job done, and there's not a lot of excitement coming out of the Carolina Panthers, which, again, nobody's surprised by that.
This was a bad game for fantasy, in part because the Dallas defense took one of the touchdowns off the table. The only player anybody ever plays confidently on the Carolina side is Adam Thielen. He had a very Thielen 8 for 74 on 11 targets. Most of them like 5 and 7 yard catches. That's who he is. He wins that option route. Your 3rd and 5 will get you 7 yards. There's no explosiveness to his game. Bryce Young, 4.2 yards per attempt. Well, Dallas defense is a nightmare matchup, but Bryce Young has not had a good season, obviously. And Frank Reich is, you know, this is the last for him as the head coach. I don't say that with any joy. because Frank Reich is somebody I enjoyed his career. I enjoyed him coaching. I thought he deserved a lot of credit for the Philadelphia success when he was there, but I'm not in the locker room. Who's to say how much credit Frank Reich really deserves, or should he have been a coach twice and all that stuff? I don't really know. On the Dallas side, look, I'm glad to see Pollard's first touchdown since week one, 20-yard run. He broke a bunch of tackles on that play, and you can see how frustrated he's been. He's run very as much as he's been inefficient, and maybe he's not 100% healthy. And so some of the blame is on him for this disappointing year, but he's run really unlucky too. He had lost a touchdown by a ticky-tack failing to report penalty a couple weeks ago. You can just sense how frustrated he's been, and he let out some of those frustrations on that touchdown run. So I was happy for Pollard. I don't want to throw a parade for a guy who has 80 total yards and a touchdown against maybe the worst team in football. It's not like, oh my God, Tony Pollard's back. But I guess I'll be fielding Tony Pollard's six start questions for the rest of the year, because this is the game where he's good enough to consider. He's not good enough to pound the table for him. Congratulations, Carolina. You did keep CeeDee Lamb in check. 6 for 38. He did have a touchdown. CeeDee Lamb is going to get 170 yards against Washington on Thursday, and I'm here for it.
I'm very here for it. Speaking of Washington, I don't have anything else to say about that particular football game. It is what it is. As we were recording, Magic Johnson seems to have also just learned about the Commanders. He tweeted, again, as we were recording this, "Wow, my Washington Commanders turned the ball over 6 times today and gave the Giants 24 points off turnovers. We lost 31-19. I think his recap of the game was better than ours.
He's a part owner of the team, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. Magic Johnson. Yeah, this is not the Showtime. Nobody's going to be calling them the Showtime Commanders, that's for sure. I don't think so. HBO is not going to be doing a based in partial fact. Did you watch any of that, by the way, the Showtime Lakers HBO show, where they took enough liberties with the story, with the facts of the story, that I couldn't watch it because they just make up stupid things. I don't know. I guess I'm more of a documentary guy than a based on fact, redoing of a series or of a story. So I don't like these historical dramas that just play along with, let's make the story go where we want it to go, not what actually happened.
Well, I think I would prefer some historical fiction than the Carolina Panthers 2023.
There you go. Historical fiction. I could come up with the phrase, but yeah, the Panthers, man. How did they ever beat if the Texans don't make the playoffs, they're going to be kicking themselves for somehow losing. And I realized Carolina was off their bye week, and I realized if there's one game Carolina had to win, they had to try to win that game for Bryce Young, because he's going to look horrible against CJ Stroud. But man, Bryce Young, he's not going to grow 3 or 4 inches, man. He's just as tall as he is. I'm getting really, I know it's 1 year. I know he has such little help around him. Next year, he's going to be adjusting to a whole new coaching staff probably. We'll see what they don't have any draft picks early enough to get an impact receiver, probably. I don't know, man. Bryce Young, I'm getting really nervous here. And it feels unfair to say in the November of his rookie year, but that's where we are.
Yeah, that is where we are. And you're right to feel pretty nervous. It's I don't know what the feeling I get. It might be nervous. Yeah, just general nervous and unease watching Bryce Young play football right now. So that is where we're at. All right, Scott, week 11. It's in the books. It's going to do it for us, buddy. Appreciate it.
It was fun. And, I know we talked negatively about Young at the end of that, but there are a lot of comeback stories today. A lot of guys, the Jaguars getting back off the mat. Devontae Adams, Tony Pollard had a better game. DJ Moore, Justin Fields was back and played pretty well. I thought this was actually, there was more positive stuff in week 11 than there might be in an average week. So I'll take it. I mean, there's always going to be, the Jets are just down bad right now. The Browns and Steelers are not playing the way they want to play football. Some teams go that way. But I thought for the most part, this was a watchable Sunday. And then we get the Super Bowl rematch, maybe the Super Bowl preview on Monday night. So, no matter where your palate is right now, it should be cleansed on Monday.
Oh, yeah. No complaining. This is a good slate of games, really exciting early slate, a lot of big performances. We just finished with like 4 games that we could have written before they happened. Mm-hmm. And that is why I think we end on such a strange note here in week 11. But again, that is going to do it for us. Be sure to tune in on Tuesday, where Andy and I go through the post-Week 11 People's Panic Meter. Get your submissions in as well. Until then, we're out.